And we're going to start off just by talking actually about the exhibition, because one of the first things I wanted to know with Hussein was, when you've done 15 years of such dense work, how do you condense it into what's actually quite a small exhibition?
Definitely, that was a challenge from the point of view that with the amount of work that exists, we could have had another 2-3 floors. So it was definitely very painful to reduce everything down to what is seen downstairs. It's hard for me to call it retrospective because, you know, I'm only 38, and I think retrospective sounds like you should be sort of...
60.
Nearly, yeah, exactly. So I think that, you know, it's really work up to date, I call it. And really the idea has been to sort of pick out the things that you can create an environment around. So a lot of the work downstairs, you know, there might be one room where you see a film, and then next room you might just see one dress. And I really liked the idea that the show was like a jewelry box type of show where I didn't mind that you didn't have like 10 dresses in a room.
I mean, I think what's interesting about this exhibition, one of the very difficult things in a fashion show is how to avoid that sort of inanimate feeling that they have around a subject that is really all about animation. Fashion is about the animation of the person, and it's something that is actually animated when you wear it, and it can feel very dead. I think the amount of activity that's happening in this exhibition is interesting, but I think it's a parallel to your collections. When I don't know how many people have seen any of Hussein's shows on the runway, and there's an enormous amount of animation that's brought into the shows. There's a lot of show design that goes on, which makes them almost like installations. And one of the things we thought that we'd talk about, because I think it's interesting, is how Hussein actually develops collections, because I think that sometimes people don't really realise how all the bits of his work actually fit in, and it sort of helps to explain it.
So, for instance, this project, it kind of was a good sort of example of how, you know, you can develop processes. And this was called Geotropics.
What date was it?
I think it's spring-summer 99, so we would have shown it. And this stemmed from the idea of how, in a way, geography affects culture. And I will say, like, you're looking at dresses now, but I'm going to say how it actually evolved, because you're going to think, well, how the hell does that relate? In a way, what I was looking at was how nature forms culture, how like mountains might form natural borders, or how rivers might allow for conquests, or how coastal lines in all continents are always exposed to, let's say, trade. Therefore, maybe they'll be more liberal than the sort of inland. So I decided to sort of take an animation through the Silk Route, where I would use each costume on the Silk Route as a means to describe the sort of geographical change. So we created an animation, and these clothes were all taken from in-between stages of the animation.
And where does the Silk Route goes
from Turkey to Western China. And so all these clothes were actually stills, and then obviously we would make them a bit more concrete. And then, so there's always this sort of sense of movement as well, or change. I mean, I design in a sequential way where one dress becomes another dress. And, you know, in a way, it's like trying to create a sense of life for the clothes. One dress got, more and more layered, and it was part of the journey again.
These dresses were sent out in pairs?
The first half of the show was sent out in pairs. I really like this idea that I had got the in-between stages from the animation, but then to make them more monumental, I would mirror them. So I think that the reason why we chose this was because it kind of exemplifies how an idea can lead to clothes, and you might not even tell from just looking at the clothes how somebody could have thought of something that led to it.
So what do you really see the value of these iconic pieces? There's very often at the end of one of your shows, there is an extremely iconic piece. What purpose do these iconic pieces really serve in your overall oeuvre? They don't go onto the rails, Harvey Nichols.
Mm-hmm. I think that for me, what's been interesting in my sort of working career is to have this sort of duality to the work, where you have these monumental pieces, and then you have clothes that stem from them. Mm-hmm. And in a way, they set each other off. Mm. Same with the films and all that later that we're going to talk about. You know, it's part of the same world. And in a way, the iconic pieces are to sort of give support to the rest of the collection. And then the iconic pieces might be bought by museums and by collectors, right. and the clothes are in the boutiques and department stores. And I love that duality. And it was something that I really wanted to do even when I was a student.
Right.
I felt that I didn't want to just only make clothes, but that the monumental pieces would always be there sort of as the sort of heart, let's say.
So how did... I mean, I think this is a question people always want to ask, who says, what, you know, why did you end up studying fashion when you could have done architecture or you could have done fine art?
Well, I think it's a... really simply put, I think... I felt there weren't that many people in fashion who were working in a cross-disciplinary way, and I thought it would add a newer angle to fashion. And I think the fact that we can even do a show like that downstairs the fact that we're speaking now, I think in a way maybe my work wouldn't have had the point of interest had I just been an artist.
No.
Because the idea is that it's definitely bringing different worlds together.
So should we look at the next lecture?
Yeah.
So the next one we thought we'd look at to sort of talk about process and how one thing leads to another and how they do actually sort of make sense. Carrie and Noel is the last but one collection, which is the one that is on sale now, and which is called Inertia.
Well, okay, we chose this collection again because it's a good example of how the monuments, in a way, link to the clothes. And this collection, Inertia, was about the speed of our lives and the idea that everything seems to be fastened up. So I thought, well, that can only result in a crash. So the whole kind of, the base of the collection was really about crash. So I looked at car crashes, and the idea was to create a vision of the body, which was the cause and effect of crash. So you would have those two things happen simultaneously, and then freeze that moment as my sort of, let's say, the iconic moment, which are, again, the pieces downstairs. As you enter, you see those pieces. So this was the beginning of that show, and we had just images of parts of cars that were abstracting, that were mixed with corsets. So it's almost like the anticipation of the crash, but before the crash. I also looked at the idea of growth, and this was the idea of, like, slow life being the opposite of speed. So these shapes were about, in a way, like natural growth on the body. And then the idea was to start to kind of make that collide with crash. So that in a way the hat is taken from a moment of something flying away. And then you have the actual crash where again everything is merged, bits of broken glass, the rubber, and then we have this crash print. I like this idea of again like cause and effect being seen in one garment. So it was the crash, but it was also the kind of the body in movement being frozen in one go. So again, this is kind of, very different subject matter. And of course, my aesthetic over the years has evolved. I guess I've become more and more interested in revealing the body. And it's always about, like, for me, what you cover and what you... Mm-hmm. What you reveal.
But I mean, here we actually talked about this when we sort of framed, but in this collection, the body becomes the location of the event. It's extremely centered on the body. We've got one more collection that we were going to talk about quickly, because the last two they've had quite clear, sort of strong ideas behind them, this idea of travel and the idea of speed. As well, but when we selected one that actually is an extremely complicated idea, which is about the limitations of language, how you express that in pieces of clothing is quite a complex thing. And it was called Panoramic. When is it from? It's quite early.
It's autumn winter 98, so over 10 years ago. The reason why we chose this was because this was much more of an abstract collection. And I wanted to sort of work on the idea of how you can create images that you can't describe, so that you couldn't call it ethnic. How there's these awful terms in fashion, like ethnic, chic, glamorous, whatever. And I wanted to create sort of, in a way, a vision of the body that you couldn't describe in any way. So there might be part insect, part, like, in a way, costume, partly marking a location, so you can call it ethnic costume, but that you wouldn't really know what they are. So this was really a sort of an attempt to do that, and it was presented on a mirror set, so to further disguise and kind of multiply the body so that you would have moments like this, where the body would be chopped up as it walked past the screen.
And it became very sort of sequential and very film-like in the actual show. It was less like looking at fashion, and it was more like looking at a series of imagery, almost, which was actually being performed live. But then live performance is also something that's quite crucial when you're showing your work, isn't it? You've had live singers, you've played the guitar. what else have you had? A lot of singers, guitar, music.
I think that, to be honest, you know, we work very hard to make these events into sort of like cultural events where people can go away remembering something. And, you know, in a way, I guess, I try to instigate things that move me. And so I think the sound is such a crucial part of anything visual. I mean, I always say visual people are sort of poor man's musicians, because everything that we're trying to do has a sense of sound. And it can never be as potent as sound. So I think that, for me, the live element there is going to punctuate what you see, depending on what I'm going to play as well. Like, if you see, obviously, you know, a camera with going up the stairs with a scary sound, you're going to think of a horror movie. If you just hear something joyful, you're not going to think that. It can manipulate or influence how you actually can, you know, perceive an image, obviously. So for me, it was always very enriching to have this way of working. And we would bust our gut in London, since 94, doing these shows. And I thought not enough people were coming. And so we decided, sort of around 2001, to take our shows to Paris. Because I was just thinking, well, I'm just, you know, there's so much effort going in.
When you say not enough people, do you mean...
Well, there was not enough traffic flowing through London.
Not enough people who were going to then go and write about them or buy them. I mean, as in buyers.
Exactly. Yeah. And obviously that's what it comes down to at the end. Mm. And even press. So they were skipping London. And that's why we went to Paris.
And did you feel that your shows were received differently in Paris, or did the audience seem to be the same? I mean,
Well, I think that you definitely have the same part of the same people that come to Paris, plus more. So obviously our business has grown since we've gone to Paris. Paris marks that kind of the whole sort of status of fashion, let's say. So, you know, it is taken more seriously as a centre, although I think London is, we're talking about this the other day, I think London is a more important centre of fashion. Somehow in Paris, there's a sort of institute of fashion, the institution of fashion. So you kind of, in a way, it feels to me like you're maybe acknowledged a little, you know, a little more. But doesn't mean that the designers who are here are not, because, you know, London is a whole new, it gets renewed all the time, and, you know, it just felt to me like the right step at the time, really.
Do you ever feel you should come back to London to fly the flag?
Well, I'd love to do projects in London. Like, for instance, this project is a major project for us, and this is our first major exhibition here. Okay. And if you can imagine that you're based as a designer in London for 15 years, and it's your first exhibition in 15 years, it's kind of strange.
Yeah.
When other countries always show more interest.
Should we move on then to talking about the fact that you don't just work as a fashion designer, that people do find it quite challenging sometimes, that you've made 5 films and you've made several installations, and that also that your collections work in a sort of broader, more artistic way. Why do you make the films? Film is a very difficult medium, it's expensive, it's time consuming, and then it has to be shown in one particular way. Well, that's obviously changing now with technology, but when you were first making films, they were relatively inaccessible, if you like. So why film?
Well, I definitely see the films as really part of the same vision, and they're really an extension of everything that we do in terms of shows. I think that when you do a so-called fashion show, I think it is like trying to be... It's trying to tell a story of some kind, but it's not through... You know, obviously speech. You know, the thing for me about the films is that you create your own environment where you can have more of an, obviously, control over the choreography, the sound, the way things look, the lighting. And in a way, a show is trying to do the same thing. I think that you're creating a live event, but it's trying to create an atmosphere. There's sound, there's choreography, there's a set. And in a way, the film is the ultimate expression of that. That's why I've been doing them, and it's not, and I've been commissioned to do them. In fact, I can never afford really to do these films off my own back. But in a way, like I said, it's the ultimate expression for me, in the sense that, you know, in a way, the shows are like films, but they're live events. I think that they also become inspiration for the collection. So I can base a film on a collection and a collection on a film. They set each other off. There's that element too. And in the recent years, when you have to do one collection after another, I think that you do have to create kind of more sources of inspiration. And I think I've been lucky enough to get these commissions in such a way that I can definitely do a collection after a film, and they can relate.
And we're slightly running out of time, but there was one last project we did want to talk about, because we talked about the fact that Histone does work with installations sort of in the context of his shows, and also outside of the context of the shows. There are a couple of installations. And there was one project that I had quite a lot to do with him as well, which was a shop that Histone opened in Tokyo, which wasn't around for that long, but was a shop that really functions like a piece of storytelling and a great piece of sort of microgeography, sort of placemaking. And he's saying worked on it with the architects called Block, Zoe and Graham, who also helped him on the show downstairs. They actually did the architecture for the show, which I think is really well done, actually.
So Caroline actually had introduced me to Block Architects, and because I wanted to find somebody to collaborate with, because I really have a lot of ideas of my own about space and the whole thing. Again, this was really an enjoyable project, and it was all about being in Cyprus and in Japan at the same time. And
whereabouts in Tokyo?
It's in Daikanyama, which is a sort of quite a residential area with businesses. So there's a lot of galleries, that kind of place. This was about omnipresence. So, and it was also about the experience of flight for those who know about my work closely. I'm obsessed with flight. And basically, it was the feeling of trying to create this transitional, sort of transactional kind of space, but also try to grasp onto the idea of a place, and of two different places, in fact. So it would be Cyprus, Japan, and this sort of sense of moving. So we had the backgammon entrance, and we had the olive trees going through the floor. And all of the signage was like airports. And then it was also about gardens, so that's why you had these sort of washing lines. And we had this blackboard where you can write on it. And then the actual, you can't really see it very well here, but the walls were inspired by aircraft wings. So the shells were like the flaps on a wing. And this was a little kind of a cinematheque area, which was based on a sort of Turkish Cypriot cafe, with all the sort of chairs I got imported from Cyprus, so people can watch the videos like they were in a sort of cafe environment.
I love this project. When are you going to open another shop? Because it's time we have one, at least in Europe.
Well, to open a store is a very big commitment. It's a huge investment. What I don't want is to have a shop which is like an empty cathedral or an empty church. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you want a shop where there's a lot of activity, and I always like the idea of it becoming more of a space where you can also do other things and not just buy clothes. I think that, you know, if anything, we'd probably open a first shop here in London, I think relatively soon, but it's really hard to say, especially with the climate right now. I think you would make huge losses. So, but yes, it's in the pipeline. It's definitely part of our plan. And there are different ways of opening shops. They don't have to be these flashy big things, you know.
Do you think we ought to throw that to the floor now? Does anybody have any questions?
Hi, I was just wondering, I'm a student at St. Martin's myself, and I was just wondering about how your work was received when you were at St. Martin's, whether they really understood you at first, or whether it was the thing that after you did the whole St. Martin's experience, you really got to explore and really be open with fashion and see it in a broader context. Was that something that developed through St. Martin's, or was it something that sort of happened afterwards?
Well, it was a mixture. I think that definitely at St. Martin's, there was certain people who, let's say, liked my work, and there was a real empathy. And then there are others, I don't know who, probably quite indifferent. But I think what happens when you're at, you know, when you're at college, I think, is that you carve out a position for yourself in a way. But generally speaking, when I left college, I did have a good response. I mean, actually, I was never planning to do my own thing. And, you know, it kind of evolved. But definitely, I did get a lot of interest after leaving because I think I was doing something quite different. But I never thought it would lead to anything commercial. And I started to get commissions. And then I started to get a bit more confident. So I thought, oh, God, I'm going to turn this into a business. But it definitely did evolve.
I think it's interesting, again, when you come back to this idea that even with a shop, you don't want to be really doing one thing and you don't want to sort of put fashion into this exclusive box and you want there to be other things happening around it. And I think that sort of really sort of pinpoints what Hussein does in his work, that he wants it sort of integrated and really with a non-exclusive approach to it. And, yeah, I think that's sort of the basis of what you do, mm-hmm. really.
Yeah, definitely.